Hey mama, I want to invite you to something. I am hosting a free anger management bootcamp on the podcast May 6th through the 10th. Monday through Friday, there will be a new episode released teaching you where anger comes from and what goes on in your brain when you feel intense feelings, how to lower your stress and increase capacity levels as a mom, how to shift your mindset to align your actions with the mom that you want to be, and how to break generational anger patterns. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a day and sign up using the link in the show notes so you can get access to the episodes as soon as they drop and an email summary of the daily trainings, as well as access to a live Q&A call on the last day of the bootcamp. Invite one or three of your mama friends so they can learn how to manage their emotions well too. Link to sign up is in the show notes. I can't wait to see you in there. Let's get back into this podcast episode. Your kids are making choices that you are very upset about. You know that you taught them not to do that, and they're still making those poor choices. How do you love your kids through that? How do you remain calm and grounded and Christ-like and show God's grace through their bad choices? Well, in today's episode, Dana comes as a guest, and she is a relationship coach, and we will be having a conversation about this. And I divided this podcast in two parts because it is just so good, and we had such a long conversation, and the next episode is going to air the following day, and I want you to listen to this whole episode. It is so, so, so good, especially if you have older kids that are teenagers and young adults and they're making poor choices and you just want to shake them up and scream at them like, what are you doing? Why in the world would you do this? And you start taking things personally as if it's a reflection on you, of who you are as a parent, and you're telling yourself, I'm a bad parent that my kids are doing this. Well, this is specifically for you. This conversation is so amazing. It is so, so, so good. I would highly, highly encourage you to listen. And my friend, I want to introduce to you Dana. So welcome, Dana, to the podcast. I am so excited to have you here.
Hey, Elizabeth. I'm glad to be here with you.
Yes, I would love for you to share a little bit about your family, what you do.
Sure. So I have a podcast called Real Relationship Talk, and it's a marriage and relationship podcast that is not specifically for Christian marriages and relationships, but primarily that is who my listeners are. I called it Real Relationship Talk because I really want to talk about like the nitty-gritties of what makes a healthy marriage. I talk a lot about my husband's and my struggle in our 24-year marriage. And I just really think that, you know, speaking about not just your triumphs, but like some of the messy parts in your life are really helpful for people. So I just kind of put it all out there and just share our story. And God has just really blessed the podcast. And we've been able to launch a coaching business from that. And so I've been able to coach couples and individuals and help them really to restore their marriages as well. So like I just mentioned, my husband and I have been married for 24 years. I cannot believe it. It's like literally by the grace of God. We have a great marriage today, but it was not always that way. And it is still a work in progress. It's not perfect by any means. We have four kids and they are 14 through 24. So full family, full life, God's good. And we're just trying to walk this thing out.
Yeah, beautiful. We have four kids too, so we can connect on that.
Yes, yes.
My husband and I have been together for 15 years. Our anniversary is going to be in May, and it's going to be a 15-year marriage. So I was thinking about some of the people that we grew up in the same youth group, and one of the couples that we were close friends with in November is going to be 17 years of marriage for them. And I was thinking, in 3 years, it's 20 years of marriage. That's insane. And that means we're not too far behind that. And I'm like, in 5 years, we're going to be together for 20 years. That's just crazy. It's such a big chunk of my life. It just blows my mind. I'm like, and that means I'm going to be almost 40. Like, what in the world is happening? I'm like, oh my gosh, life is just, I think as you get older, life just goes faster and faster. I don't know what it is about it, but.
It's so true. I remember thinking like when we had been married for like 3 years and I was like, Oh my gosh, 10 years seems like such a long time. And then you get 10 to 10 and then you're like 15. And now I'm like, we have been married for literally almost a quarter of a century. It's crazy. I just can't like just put it into words. Like it's great, you know, but it's also, like I said before, it's not just like the longevity, because I've known couples that have been together for a long time, but not necessarily had a good marriage for the whole time. So my husband and I were like, listen, if we're going to spend this time with one another, we're going to have to make it good. We're going to have to work on this marriage, because we are not just going to be together just to say, oh yeah, we've been married for 30 years and 15 of those 30 have been horrendous.
Yeah, I agree. And I remember when I was getting married, one of the things that my dad told me, he's like, marriage is like, you have to put intentional work. It's like a bonfire. You have to constantly keep putting in more wood, in the sense like to keep the fire going, because otherwise it's just going to die. And I feel like in marriage, we either grow closer together or we grow apart. It's like, you can't just like stay in one spot, like with life and just circumstances and just life happening and kids, like you either intentionally grow closer together and it like, you have to be intentional, or that's you right. Literally life just like pulls you apart. And so that's just the real reality and the truth of it. So I want to ask you a question, an icebreaker question. What is something you've been loving lately? It could be anything.
You know, this is going to sound so cliche, but I have been loving my relationship and time with the Lord in the morning. I am an entrepreneur, so I work from home. And those morning hours, and I say hours because like I don't rush it. It's like when my kids get off to school, the younger boys are still in school. And when they get off to school, it's just me and God. And those times have been so refreshing for me. I cannot start my day without that. And I know, you know, different people are in different stages of life. If you got little kids, you're like, oh my God, there's no way I could spend 2 hours in the presence of God. Like, and then that's okay. I wasn't able to do that either when my kids were little. But now that my kids are older and I do have this quiet time at home, that has been everything to me. Like, absolutely everything. Before I start working, before I work out, before I eat, like that is just fueling my tank right now in a new and in a fresh way. And so I'm just super grateful that I do have that time and that I'm spending this time with the Lord. It's just changing every aspect of my life right now.
Yeah. And I love that you said that, like, it's not necessarily available for us in every season in life. Like, your kids, you know, are older, they go to school, because when you do have little tiny ones and you have a baby on your brain and you literally can't spend that time. You have toddlers running around, climbing counters. So you're literally putting out fires. And I remember when I have little ones like that, the time that I got to spend with God is when I really, especially with my youngest, what I would do, it would be my first nursing session in the morning. And I would like not have my phone. I would just close my eyes and I would just pray. Mm. I would just pray and invite God and invite the Holy Spirit into my day and just like connect with God and just name things that I'm grateful for. And sometimes I would either listen to a podcast or a devotional as I'm nursing, but that was the way that I could in that season in life. And now that my kids sleep through the night and now that I do have that time, it's like you just, it shifts, and now I can devote more time to that. And so I'm glad that you said that, and just to give a little bit of relief for those that are in different stages in life.
Yeah, it's like a best friend, you know, like God is my best friend, literally. Like, and I think about like my physical best friend in different stages of our life, you know, like when we both had little kids at home, we might pop on the phone for 5 minutes, or we might only be able to text, or we might go 3 days and we're not able to connect. But that doesn't change the connection or the love that we have for one another. And so I think sometimes we do put a lot of pressure on ourselves, like my devotional life has to look this certain kind of way, or it has to look like my pastor's wife, or, you know, whoever's life. And it doesn't. It's like, if we can remember that God is our best friend, he desires to have a relationship with us. He wants to be close to us. He wants to be in our mess with us. So if you're changing those diapers, like, pray while you're changing the diapers. When your kids are acting crazy, like, be like, Lord, I need you right now. Like, bringing him into every aspect of the day, and not just saying, okay, I got to like carve out somehow 30 minutes or an hour of quiet time. Again, I can do that because I'm in a different stage of my life, but God's still with me throughout all the day, you know, all throughout my work and my family and all the things, cooking dinner when I don't feel like it. And, you know, tough conversations, like just really integrating the Lord into your entire day, I think is where we need to really focus on. Not just like, oh, I got to get up at 5 a.m. and spend however much time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that because like, just even like one of the things that I practice first thing, I wake up in the morning and just say, God, I'm inviting you to be with me throughout the day. Like, please be part of this day with me. And sometimes when I take a shower, I don't turn anything on. I don't listen to anything. And I just use that time to pray. And that's what I've been doing recently. Just when I take a shower every day, I just don't listen to a podcast, don't listen to music. I literally just have silence and just use that time to pray and just pray over my friends and over family. And it's like this uninterrupted time, you know, for me. And it's like a connected, you know, a healthy habit to something I'm already doing, you know, like it's just part of my routine now. And so that is just like another, I guess, like a simple way that we can do that into integrate and like invite God into our day. And yeah, so thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Yes. So today you're here to talk about practical steps that we can do as parents when our kids are making harmful and maybe destructive choices that go against our values of the way that we raise them. And you have some teenage kids and adult kids. So you've walked the walk. And I remember listening to your podcast and you shared about like how you've experienced some struggles with your kids. And so I want you to talk on this topic today, and I wanted to touch specifically on how do we deal with this as Christians? Because when I was being raised and in the conservative, I would say more on the legalistic side of Christianity that I was raised in, there was this belief that your kids' behaviors are a reflection of you as a parent, how well you're doing as a parent. If you're a good parent, your kids will behave good. If you are not such a great parent, your kids are not behaving well. They're making poor choices. They're getting into drugs. They are, you know, sleeping around. They are talking back, being disrespectful, and just making poor decisions and life choices. And it's always was looked at like, if you can't control your kids, that means you are a bad parent. And that would lead to a lot of parents trying to micro control their kids, which would lead into even more tension in relationships because nobody likes to be micro controlled. Typically, if that happens, the person tries to bite back even more. And so I want to talk to you about that. What would you say to that belief system that I just shared? And like, what are some practical things that parents can do when they see that their kids are making choices that are really hurtful and destructive to them? And parents know that have lasting effects. And even some of those choices will affect us as parents. It's not just the kids. It's going to affect us. Let's say if your kid is sleeping around, they're going to get pregnant or get someone pregnant. And then let's say you're going to become a grandparent, right? Like you're going to have to, or they're doing drugs or something like that, you know? So talk to me about that.
Yeah, that's such a great conversation, Elizabeth. I think first of all, it is absolutely a myth, a lie, if I can even say that, to feel like if I'm a good parent, my kids are going to turn out great. If I'm a bad parent, my kids are going to turn out bad. First of all, that's too much pressure. And there is no biblical reference for that whatsoever, starting with God the Father, who is absolutely perfect in every way. And his first offspring, Adam and Eve, rebelled. In a perfect world where everything was great, where everything was given to them, where they had no negative influences, and they still rebelled. So I think for parents to take that pressure off of them, first of all, is where we need to start. I've seen many, many friends even who grew up in really, really dysfunctional homes where their parents were either neglectful or just bad parents or not believers. And these friends of mine are amazing people. So you know what I mean? If we're going to look at it in the negative, like, oh my gosh, if I'm a bad parent or if my kids are bad, then I must be bad. Well, then you got to take that the whole way through then. And so we see that breaks down, that whole fallacy breaks down. It is not if you're a great parent, your kids are going to turn out great. And if you're a bad parent, your kids are going to turn out bad. You mentioned the word control. God doesn't control us. You know, as a matter of fact, one of the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. So it's learning how to control yourself and then teaching your children how to have self-control. Whenever you as a parent feel like it's my duty to control someone else, and I talk about this in the couples that I coach, as a spouse, you can control your spouse. As a parent, you cannot control your children. And when you try to do that, everyone's miserable because that's not the way that God ever intended for it to be. So you can inspire your kids, you can influence your kids, you can be a good example to your kids. And then I think what's really important is when those kids make mistakes, not if, but when, because they're going to, when they make mistakes, when they break your heart, when they do things that you know that you didn't raise them to do, then you have to not look at yourself. Because honestly, that's really selfish to be like, oh my gosh, their choices are somehow about me. It's really not. It's not about you at all. So how can I look at those choices that those kids are making and say, okay, how can we teach what God's grace is in this? And I have had a lot of practice with this, Elizabeth. Like you said, we have two teenagers, two adult kids. We have had some messy situations in our kids' lives. And there are some decisions, our kids are good kids, but there are some decisions that they have made that my husband and I are like, what the heck? Like, where did you get that from? Like, why did you decide to do that? You know? And instead of us getting like all, you know, mad and like we're disconnected from our kids, we have real emotions now. We're going to be disappointed. We're going to be upset. But it's like, all right, let's take a step back. Where's the lesson here? Like, what does God need us to teach our child through this? So I'll give you an example. One of my kids decided that they wanted to start getting into vaping. Okay. And like all their friends were vaping and they're trying it out. And of course we know that like that's harmful for you because there's synthetic chemicals and all of that. Right. So we've taught our kids, like, you know, obviously like most parents say no to drugs, don't get involved, don't follow your friends, be a light, be a leader, be an example, all that stuff. Like we preach that to our children all the time. So when this particular kid started vaping, none of our kids had, you know, really done that. And so we're like, okay, we can either make this child feel like a reject and a horrible Christian and a bad person, or we can have a conversation. So we just started saying, what do you like about vaping? Like, and they were like, well, I like the smell. I like the, it makes me feel at ease. And we were like, okay, what do you mean it makes you feel at ease? Well, I get anxious and it helps me not to be anxious. Boom. Like, okay, now we've got an open door because we know what the Bible teaches about anxiety. So then it was like, you know what? That is not the best way to handle your anxiety, because yes, it might be helping you. However, it may actually be harming you physically. And God knows if it turns into some addictive behavior. So what do you think about when you get anxious, just saying, God, will you help me through my anxieties? Like teaching that child to process their anxieties, teaching that child to process their emotions. And that has been like our saving grace is really, again, looking at when our kids make mistakes, what lesson, how can we help them? Are we upset? Yes. Are we disappointed? Yes. But we're not going to stay there. And we're not going to internalize, oh my gosh, we are horrible parents because our kids are out here vaping. I'm a pastor at my church, Elizabeth. Like, you know what I did though? I told my fellow pastors and especially our youth pastor, like, hey, because he used to vape. And I was like, hey, can you talk to this child? And, you know, maybe they'll listen to something that you're saying that maybe they won't hear. So it's bringing it into the light as well and not feeling like I am, or, you know, me and my spouse are like in the dark and we're alone and nobody else goes through this. Everybody goes through stuff like that in their family. And so, you know, my very long answer to all of that is not to internalize what your children are doing, but instead to be able to look for a lesson, to be able to look for something redemptive that can come out of their bad choices.
I love that. I love that you wanted to like get to the root of that. Like, you know, I wonder what's going on underneath those choices and behaviors, because when anybody, anybody, when we make negative choices and unpleasant, hurtful, destructive choices, there's always something underlying, you know, underneath that. Like, and getting to the root of that and having that conversation without being emotionally all escalated. Because when, let's say you find out that your kid is doing that, which I hope my kids don't, I'm sure I'll deal with something really challenging, you know, coming forward. But I hope my kids won't do anything like this. But learning what I've learned about emotional regulation, when we're emotionally triggered and escalated, we say hurtful things. Absolutely. We over-exaggerate. We're emotionally so turned up and we overreact. We say things that are not helpful. And so having some time to just like, okay, I'm going to take some space to like, process this information and then just get curious. Like, I wonder what is going on. Like, what's underneath that behavior? Like, something's driving them to do that. Is it some feeling like they need to fit in? You know, that could be one of them, right? Like, for your child, it's like anxiety. Maybe there's something else. Like, and actually, like, having a productive conversation when you're not emotionally charged, because then that makes them feel more safe to open up to you and actually have a productive conversation that could lead to something, you know, helpful. So I'm really glad you said that, because that is, I think, like one of the things that many parents in general lack. Part of why people have like tension in relationships is like they get escalated and they overreact and they try to solve, or they go to their kid attacking them verbally right away when they're so escalated and feeling so angry, because right. They're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen now? Everybody's going to think about this, my kid. And like, I'm failing as a parent and XYZ. And then the other thing that I really like that you said is that the enemy wants us to keep this to ourselves, right? He's like, you're the only one dealing with this. How embarrassing is this that you're a pastor and your kids are doing this, right?
Exactly.
This is exactly what he wants you to think. What are people going to think and say about you? Like, if a pastor's kid is doing that, well, I guess, you know, what can you say about other kids? And so I'm sure those are some negative thoughts that were creeping in. So tell me how you and your husband overcame that. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of like things you already learned along the way and perspective shifts. So how did you shift your perspective? How did you invite God into the process to overcome that?
Yeah. I remember I was watching Andy Stanley years ago. This is, oh my goodness, I don't even know how many years and years ago. And he told this story about he was preaching one Sunday. And right after he preached, some lady from the church was like, your son slipped out of church and like went to the coffee shop near the church. And basically they were like skipping church. And so Andy Stanley was like, in that moment, I could have been like, oh my gosh, I can't believe my son is leaving. He said, or I could look at that and be like, let me find out why my son doesn't want to be in church. And so he didn't respond to the behavior. Again, kind of like I was saying with my son with the vaping, or my child with the vaping, I just like outed what kid it was. But he had to take a step back and say, okay, I can either respond because I now feel embarrassed, or I can look at what is going on with my child. And so that has really been my husband's and my MO. Like, we are not going to get embarrassed by their choices, because again, everybody has something in their family. So when we start thinking about like, what are they going to say? What are they going to think? That's called the fear of man. And the Bible actually says that the fear of man is a trap. And it's a trap for many reasons. It's a trap because we end up getting so focused on what other people are thinking and what other people are saying versus what God wants to be doing in our lives and in our families. So I'm not going to care about what other people are saying. People can say whatever they want to say. And I'm also not going to put that undue pressure on my kids because they're PKs, that they have to somehow be these like model perfect children. My kids are kids like anybody else's kids. They're going to have struggles. They're going to try stupid stuff. They're going to say dumb stuff. They're just going to be kids. They're not like special because their parent is a pastor. And so I think when whether you're a pastor or a leader, or whether you know, people put you up on some pedestal for whatever reason, you can't allow that then to come into your home. Like that, that may be people's perception of you, but you can't allow that to come into your home. So I don't process like, what are the people going to think? I'm like, let the people think whatever they want to think. I think that what's more helpful is when people are able to see you and your real family walking through real life challenges in a way that is productive and healthy. And that's why I talk about our struggles. I talk about our struggles in marriage. I talk about our struggles with parenting. I talk about our struggles in life, because people can learn from that instead of like trying to pretend like we've got this perfect family and like, because our kids are being raised in the Lord, that they're not going to have struggles. Like that's just not reality. It's not reality for any leader that I know. I have seen my own senior pastor, his daughter went through a very tough time. I mean, and she's been pretty open with her story. He's been very transparent with her story. And I think that every time that we can kind of tell on ourselves, if I can say it that way, we shame the devil, because the enemy is always trying to keep us bound with shame, with fear of man, with what are other people going to think, with regret. And so every time that we can say, you know what, this isn't the ideal. And yeah, my kid made some not so wise choices, but this is how we're handling that. Like in real time, like not like 10 years ago, my kid made this mistake, but like, nope, yesterday, this is what happened in our family. And this is how we're handling that. And that for us has kept us humble. It's kept us relatable, and it's kept us dependent upon the grace of God, because we know we're trying to parent the best that we can, but there's still going to be some open doors somewhere. Sometimes the enemy is going to get a foothold. Sometimes our kids are going to believe the lie about who they are from the enemy. And so we just have to be very aware of those moments and then say, okay, Lord, how can we actually recover from those moments? How can we actually use whatever is going on in order to then help somebody else who might be going through a similar situation in their own family?
That is so well said. And I really like that you touched on that, because one of the things that you said in your podcast, and which circles back to what you just all said, that is like, who do you choose to become as a parent while your kids are making negative choices? Mm-hmm. God is working on you during this season. And if you are looking at yourself in this situation, like, oh my gosh, I'm failing, what are people going to think? You're going to create more fear, more anxiety, more stress, more try to control, which will create more tension, more anger with your kids, and just draw apart the relationship. Versus if you get curious and be like, I wonder what's going on underneath that. Mm-hmm. Get curious instead of angry, because anger, well, it's normal to get angry a little bit in the beginning, but anger and curiosity cannot coexist. If you're curious, you're not going to feel angry. And so get curious and then ask yourself that question that I really like that you said, like, who do you choose to become through this?
Yeah.
When your kids are making negative choices, how do I want to show up in this as a parent? Well, how do I want to look back at this circumstance and look back and how did I handle this? Did I handle it in the way that I'm proud of, in the way that it's God honoring, in a way that showed my kids love, that even though they made mistakes, I still love them and I accept them? Speak a little bit more on that. Who do you choose to become as a parent and when your kids are making negative choices?
Yeah. You know, and I can speak on this, Elizabeth, because I did it wrong. You know, like I look at my older kids and we're like, sorry, guys, like you guys were the experimentation kids. We've learned a lot. And so the younger kids, you know, they kind of get the best of us, if you will. And I think that when I was an angry mom, when I was the mom who was reacting to everything that my kids were doing, who it was making me was someone that I didn't want to be. I didn't want to be an angry mom. I didn't want to be this person who was just always reacting about what my kids were doing. I really wanted to be someone who exhibits the fruits of the Spirit. This is what I'm literally teaching my children, right? So I had to realize it's not what we say, but it's how we act. More is caught than taught. So if I'm going to expect my children to be self-controlled, well, then my goodness, I better be self-controlled. If I'm going to expect my kids to be respectful of everyone at all times, well, then I have to be that of everyone, including my kids at all times. If I'm going to expect my kids to cast their cares on God because He cares for them, I need to model that. Lord, I'm casting these cares on you because I know that you care for me. So when I decided, like, I want to be the mother that my kids trust, I want to be a safe place for my children. I want to have a close relationship with my kids. I want my kids to be able to talk to me about anything. Like, those are the things that I wanted to be. That's who I want my kids to know me as. So then I realized I have to then put behaviors in place that will facilitate that. So if I'm flying off the handle all the time, well, then I'm not going to be someone that they can trust. I'm certainly not going to be a safe space, and they're not going to want to talk to me about anything. So the fruit of it, and it's really by God's grace alone, when I look at my older kids, my oldest is 24, and then the next one is 21, and they call us and talk to us about everything. My oldest moved out. He's got his own house now. He's doing great, selling real estate in the area, doing really, really well. My daughter is entering, or this is her senior year in college, and literally talks to us about everything. And I'm just so grateful, because it could have gone a different way if I would have stayed on that path of reacting and anger and this isn't how the kids are supposed to be, versus, you know what, Lord, maybe that's not the choices that I would have chosen for them, but we're going to find some redemption here, and I'm going to be a safe place for my kids. And we are that. And so, again, life is messy. That if there's nothing else that I hope, you know, that your listeners can get from this, is that life is not pre-planned. You have to learn how to, like, be flexible, and you have to learn how to depend on God's grace in those moments where your children are not meeting your expectations. And then the humility part comes in, because we realize that we don't always meet God's expectations. Like, think of how many times we miss the mark. And that's really all sin is missing the mark. How many times do we miss the mark? How many times does the Lord tell us to do something and we delay, or we just don't obey? How many times are we inundated with fear and worry and doubt, even though God has proven himself faithful time and time and time again? So when we look at ourselves, it gives us grace for our kids to say, you know what? They are growing. They are learning. And the way that we learn is through failure. It's through mistakes. So I want to be a facilitator to help them to be able to learn through those mistakes.
Yeah, I love everything you're saying. And a lot of it, I think, is maturity, probably, with as you're getting older and with experience. But a lot of it is just perspective shifts. Just shifting your perspective and understanding that maybe the way you were raised and some of the belief systems, they are not actually helping, like that micro controlling and my kids are a reflection of me. And is this even true? Is this what the Bible says? Because a lot of it is like, it was just passed on from generation to generation and nobody really questioned it. And just questioning that, is this even true? And what does the Bible say about this? And finding examples in the Bible that contradict maybe that belief that's not true. And then creating a new truth of what the scripture says and living that out.
I will pause this episode here. And then tomorrow there will be the second part of this conversation that I will drop on the podcast feed. But I want to share with you the takeaways of this podcast episode so far. Number one, God is calling us to have self-control instead of other control. Our job is to be in control of ourselves, what we think, say, and do, not in control of our children. Number two, when kids make bad choices, ask yourself, how can I teach God's grace through this circumstance and situation? How can I teach God's grace? Number three, be curious when your kids are making poor choices. Anger and curiosity cannot coexist. Ask yourself, I wonder why they did that. When you are curious, you're less likely to feel angry. Number four, go cool off before you have this difficult conversation with your kids to avoid overreacting. When you're emotionally charged, you will say things that are regretful and you will overreact. So go cool off before you have that conversation. Number five, ask yourself, who do I need to be right now to show up as a parent God is calling me to be? And what would that look like? So who do I need to be right now? Do I need to be Christ-loving? Do I need to be empathetic? Do I need to be understanding? Okay, well, what would that look like? What are the actual action steps for me to take in order to live that out? My friend, tune in for part two tomorrow. It's so good. So good. Such a great conversation. I'm so thankful for Dana coming over and to the podcast and having this conversation, because it's so important. Because if we want to have a good relationship with our kids, we really need to take ownership of what we think, say, and do, and how we respond. And before I let you go, I wanted to share with you one of my Amazon favorite things, and it's going to be really quick. It's a visual timer that I use with my kids on a daily basis. And this is a timer that I turn on for my kids when I need them to see how much more time they need to stay in quiet time, how much time they have left to eat or to clean up. It's been so good. And I have several in my house. And one tip, if you have little kids, don't let them play with a timer. They will probably break it and twist it too hard. So keep it at a surface where they can't reach or communicate that it's only for mama and daddy to, you know, turn on the timer. But this visual timer I use on a regular basis, especially during quiet time with my kids. They're like, how much more time do I need to stay in quiet time? Well, 30 more minutes, and I have that visual timer going for them. So check it out. The link for the timer is in the show notes. Totally worth it. Love it, love it, love it. It really helps the kids. Okay, friend, come back tomorrow for the second part of this interview. And until next time, my friend.
Hi, friend. Did you learn something new or found value in this episode? If so, would you stop right now and share this episode with one Christian mama friend who has young kiddos and could benefit from this message? Word of mouth is the best way to spread the word and grow this podcast. Also, if you enjoyed this podcast, would you please rate and review on Apple Podcasts so I know that this content is helpful and I can continue to create more episodes. This is really the only way for me to know that you are blessed by this podcast. I'll see you soon, my friend. God bless you.